KFUG Community Radio. It is 10:30. Paul Kritz with you, and the as yet to still be unnamed. it was the End of the World show last year. I'm not sure what we'll call it this year. I've got Jessica Sainar from the Wild Rivers Outpost sitting here to microphone. Say hi, Jessica.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, it works great. And then on the phone, joined by Will Merriweather. Are you with us, Will?
Hey. I'm with you.
Right. Oh, good. I wanted to make sure everything was working. We've got Will, of course, is a professor of history, and Pauly Sy out at CR. He's been on KFUG a number of times. He's an author as well. And yesterday, or last night, I guess, I saw your invitation, Will, to your Facebook friends to have folks join you on a drinking Zoom call to sort of decompress and contextualize and deal with and put into perspective the events of yesterday. So let's just start with that, Will, if you don't mind. How did that call go, and what happened? Any insights?
So it went great. I got to talk and see people from my past and all over the U.S. I probably drank too much. I'm feeling it today. I'm not as young as I used to be.
So did they?
But yeah, yesterday was a crazy day.
Can you? Well, I don't know. What sort of feelings, what sort of thoughts and emotions did the folks on the call bring to you? I mean, I imagine, was it just the array of from dismay and all of that, or was there a reaction that you didn't expect?
So dismay, shock. There were a whole lot of people yesterday shocked. You know, even going to different news outlets and listening to politicians from all over the U.S., they were shocked. My friends and family were kind of in that same category of, I can't believe this is happening. And I had actually been telling students that this was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That not necessarily the extent, but after the election, whenever Donald Trump refused to concede after the Electoral College, after the Associated Press had said that the election went to Joe Biden, he kept telling his supporters that it's a fraud, that there was elections were stolen, that the voting systems were rigged. And this is a way to kind of take down democracy. And one of the things that I did, and I helped reassure them, was that last night when we had the call, we were good. Like, our democracy survived because in the moment in which people had to decide which side they were going to be on, most of them decided that our democracy is more important than one man trying to steal an election. And I do want to reiterate that that is exactly what he was trying to do. You know, there were all these court cases challenging fraudulent votes, but they never had evidence. All of those cases got thrown out of courts repeatedly. This is what happens whenever we allow individuals in leadership positions to lie and ramp people up.
Is there a I know you're also a history professor at CR. Is there a historical context or examples in history of maybe not to this level, but of a president refusing to concede an election and repeating statements that you know isn't true, is factually inaccurate, that you can think
no.
of?
No. So we've never had a president refuse to concede after the election. We've never had a something like this coming from the top.
Okay.
But there are historical examples of coups, or at least attempted coups, in the U.S. In 1932, after the election of FDR, there were a group of bankers led by Prescott Bush who started trying to promote General Smedley Butler. And at first, they were just promoting him. He was a very popular figure with veterans, with those who were still serving. And they had him going around the country giving all of these speeches. And in 1933, after the inauguration of FDR, and we started seeing some of these banking regulations, they wanted him to challenge FDR and to launch a military coup. And Smedley Butler went to Congress and said, this is what's happening, this is who's involved. And they pretty much just laughed him out of Congress, saying, we don't believe you. And then later on, all of these things started coming out. But nothing happened to those who had tried to orchestrate it.
Mm.
But, you know, even if we go back to the Civil War, those people were calling for an insurrection against the United States government. And we still glorify those individuals. And so this is, our past is catching up to us.
That's a fantastic way of putting it. I mean, to see the stars and bars kind of waved through the House, you know, the halls of Congress and the halls of the Capitol. I'm not sure a lot of people realize just historically what that means. I mean, this is the battle flag of the Confederacy, and here it is in the halls of Congress yesterday.
And that flag yesterday was closer. You know, it was in the Capitol building. It never got that close.
Right.
In the Civil War.
Right. I was thinking about that. Here's this this shirtless guy doing what Robert E. Lee couldn't do.
Right.
And again, I think it's also because, you know, we've allowed this. We've allowed this. There's Confederate flags flying just right down the road from us here. And we've never dealt with all of these things that it seems historically have torn us apart from the very beginning. And that's one thing, you bring the historical perspective, which is very, very important. One thing, just in American history studies, one thing, especially looking at the first few presidencies, right? Looking at, after looking at the Adams administration into Jefferson and things were crazy back then too, back when the democracy was brand new, or when our republic was brand new like that. I mean, just a lot of what was happening in the press and mobs in the street and basically gangs being called out and all of these things happening. It seems, yesterday was striking and strange and weird for us in modern America, but over the history of America, was yesterday that aberrant?
No. We've been lucky that since World War II, both parties were incredibly close when it comes to foreign policy. They were somewhat close in regards to domestic policy. And since the 1980s, our nation has really been splitting politically. And so this has been building for a while. And I want to reiterate, or I want to highlight that after the Civil War, we put up statues to the people who waged war against us. Like, the Confederate flag and the people who fly that are flying a flag of individuals who levied war against the United States. And we have schools and buildings named after Robert E. Lee, who had his citizenship stricken from him, and he doesn't get it back until the 1970s, well after he was dead.
Really? Even when he was when he headed the university and all of the things he did in the latter part of his life after the war, he was not a citizen? I wasn't aware of that.
And so after the Civil War, a lot of historians, especially in the South, started writing what was called the Lost Cause ideology. And they put forth this idea that they were right, and they lost the war for all of these other reasons, but it wasn't for the reasons in which they waged it. They still put forth this idea that it was a noble cause. they tried to reform the figures who had led the revolution and the rebellion against the U.S. And they put up statues glorifying them. And that's, whenever we build statues, whenever we name buildings after people, we do it because they deserve it, because we want to honor them in some particular way.
It's a way of folding historical figures kind of into our national narrative, right?
Right. You know, there is not a single statue of Benedict Arnold in the United States of his, that has his face, that tries to glorify him. There's only one statue to him, and it's of his left foot at Saratoga, because that's where he had gotten shot.
Oh, wow.
And even if we go back and we look at the election of 1801 and this peaceful transfer of power, that was rare.
Yeah.
But it is Thomas Jefferson's VP, Aaron Burr. He actually ends up getting charged with treason.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this idea that we can't hold Trump accountable for what he did isn't there. The only reason Aaron Burr was found not guilty was Article 3 of the United States Constitution spells out explicitly what treason is, and the only ways in which you can be found guilty of that crime is it requires two individuals to testify against you who had direct evidence. So they saw the act actually occur, and they only had one direct evidence and several indirect evidence.
Yeah, Burr was good at that.
Right. Yeah.
That's right, and he was trying to pry away, or they were saying he was trying to pry away part of the United States, and he was talking with the Spanish and the British and doing all of these, and nobody really knows exactly what he was trying to do. That's interesting. I'm sorry, you had something you were going to ask, Jessica.
I was going to ask. It sounds like, there have been several lawmakers, even in the president's own party, even among his own cabinet, that are saying that he instigated the mob violence that we saw at the Capitol yesterday. What sorts of consequences could he face? I mean, I know the 25th Amendment has been kind of thrown out there as a possibility. What sorts of consequences could he face potentially as a result of what occurred? What are you doing?
I'm just changing this.
Yesterday.
There's a Republican rep from Illinois, Adam Kinzinger, who called this what it is. This was an attempted coup. And right now, there are articles of impeachment that are being worked on in the House, and they need to pass. As much as I would love Joe Biden to be the 46th president, he needs to be number 47. For the next 2 weeks, we need a President Pence. Because whenever you impeach a president, you're saying that they've abused their power, they've committed some high crime or misdemeanor. And the punishment for impeachment is only removal from office or removal from office and never being allowed to hold a position of public trust again. That means, and that is what the Senate needs to do. Right now, Donald Trump could leave office at the end of his term and in 4 years run for office again. He could run for office in a House election in a very conservative state and go back to Congress, and he could go to Congress. There's precedent for that. John Quincy Adams, after he left the presidency, ended up serving in the House again. So impeachment has to happen, and we have to hold Donald Trump accountable for this, because there is direct evidence from his mouth, his tweets, that he had instigated this. He told people to show up on January 6th at the Capitol. It's going to be a wild time. They had this rally, and he told them to go to the Capitol, to march to the Capitol, and fight like hell for what is right.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was in front of a crowd, me, Will Merriweather, as an individual citizen, and I told a crowd that we have to go march somewhere and we have to fight like hell, that would be inciting a riot.
Do you have? Do you, can you speak at all to the 25th Amendment? That's also been a lot around in the headlines this morning, and actually for the last 4 years. But it seems like now you've got Republicans talking about this possibility. Is it applicable in this case?
It is, and you know, we've had politicians who've been saying, well, we should invoke this over the time, and now there are actual members of Donald Trump's cabinet saying this needs to happen. And invoking the 25th Amendment would temporarily give Mike Pence the presidency. Donald Trump also has the ability to fight part of that. And that's why I think both the 25th Amendment needs to be, utilized at the same time of impeachment proceedings. Impeachment proceedings could help him never run for office again, but the 25th Amendment would temporarily remove him from the presidency.
How does it work with fighting? Everything I've read about that, I don't see how that happens. Initially, there would be what, the vice president, a majority of the cabinet saying you're unfit for office, and
yes.
There's like a timeout period, right? Like,
yes.
Right at the beginning, like a 3 week, like, let's set aside, you're not president for 3 weeks and then revisit this. Is that how it works?
So when I say that he would have the ability to fight this, he would be able to go to court to essentially say that he is fit and that they are simply trying to remove him from power.
Okay.
And so that's why it would take a little bit of time. But, you know, this is something that I think can actually be a unifying moment for our nation. Every one of us watched what happened yesterday, or the reading about it in the news. And I think together, whether you voted for Joe Biden or you voted for Donald Trump in the election, today, on January 7th, we can come together and say, this should not happen. This individual, yes, I voted for him, but he should not be in a position of power. Because we're lucky that they didn't succeed.
Mm-hmm.
But our conversation today would be very different had Donald Trump been able to get military support to help him do this. This would have been very different if the individuals, when they stormed the Capitol building, had they been able to get a hold of the box that held the electoral votes, they would have had to reconvene the state legislatures
mm-hmm.
to send a new vote, a new round of votes.
It's the point being that all things being equal, sort of, if the coup had succeeded, if something had happened, his role wouldn't have changed. He would have still done everything he did yesterday. So it's all the reason that it didn't come to fruition was because enough other people didn't buy into it. So that
yeah.
kind of puts him on this footing of, like, you know, win or lose, I did the exact same thing, which is, you know, so if the coup had succeeded, you could get rid of me. You know, is that what, is it sort of like it's the same regardless now because he sort of fulfilled his role in this whole deal?
Yeah, he, you know, whenever he said, you know, he tried to use the power of the Justice Department against the Secretary of State in Georgia to try to decertify the election. He had threatened him with potential criminal investigations if he didn't get the outcome of the election changed or didn't try to find votes. That in itself is a means to try to overthrow our democratically elected process.
Mm-hmm.
And our democracy works because it's very fluid. And it's not just the people who went out and voted, but it's everyday citizens that helped run the polls. It's everyday citizens that are the local registrar helping get individuals registered to vote. And they don't determine which party you are whenever they're not going to reject someone's voter registration based upon party. They're not going to throw someone's vote out because of party. And that's what he has been wanting to do. He's been calling for violence. Remember during the presidential debate, he told the Proud Boys mm-hmm. to stand down and stand by. Yesterday, he told them to go fight like hell.
Yeah.
And Rudy Giuliani also said we should bring back trial by combat.
How are we at almost 11 o'clock in the morning the day after that without some sort of fallout, some sort of... I got up this morning, first thing I look at it, I start looking at the news and saying, okay, what are the consequences of yesterday? And it just, you know, just maybe as a nation, we're sitting back and kind of taking a moment and breathing, but... it just seems like with every passing moment, the gravitas of yesterday maybe is eroded slightly and nothing will happen. Do you have any hopes in the 2 weeks left to this administration that that Congress, Republican and Democrat, can come together and actually do something meaningful to whether it's chastise him, remove him from office, but do something that can bring us together in the waning days of his presidency?
There are people who probably will not like this statement, but I am going to commend Mitch McConnell. It doesn't happen very often.
It's from weird. Kentucky. It's weird to say and weird to hear. Yeah.
I'm from Kentucky. I know people who voted for Mitch McConnell. I have family who did, and people who voted for Amy McGrath. But yesterday, whenever they began challenging the votes, and they went to the Senate, Mitch McConnell said, that's not who we are. Mm-hmm. If we go down this path, our democracy is over. And our democracy takes time. It's slow. It's ineffective. And that's mm-hmm. good. Because we do not want the passions of the people. We do not want demagogues to be able to rise up. And so...
Yeah, but when one does, don't you want to have the ability to react?
and we did.
Really? It seems like instead of reacting to this or dealing with this, we're just lucky it wasn't worse.
We did react to it. The Capitol Police should have had far more people there. That was a mistake early on. We eventually got the National Guard. They retook the Capitol building. And last night, they certified the votes for Joe Biden. And they said that they were not going to leave until it was done, because they have 5 days to actually go through the entire process. And... all of those people who stormed the Capitol building, there will be arrest. It will happen. Maybe this is a product of the American education system, but if you're going to launch a coup, you should probably try to hide your face. You shouldn't tweet out what you're doing unless you win. So we have video evidence of all of those people who are in the Capitol building. If they've ever posted anything public on social media, that can be used to get to identify them. There will be pictures sent of them, and people will inform the police of their friends and their family who participated in this. And they will get a fair trial. Today is a day in which we should be thankful that our democracy survived And we should also try to reaffirm that. We should want jury duty.
I'm sorry.
I know. There's only two things that a citizen of the United States can do that no one else living in the U.S. can.
Vote serve on a jury.
And serve on a jury.
Yeah. I do have a question, and you might have touched on this a little bit earlier, but this is specifically related to those in Del Norte County who voted Republican during the 2020 election, who supported Donald Trump, continue to support Donald Trump. I don't know if many of them are looking at the events of yesterday and are either, you know, were either cheering the protest, I don't even want to call them protesters, but cheering them on, or were horrified at what unfolded, and you know, maybe are coming to grips with the fact that they voted for someone who appears to have been, you know, instigating what had happened. Do you have anything you'd like to say to them, at all?
There were different reasons to vote for Donald Trump. In this election, Donald Trump actually increased the number and the percentage of votes from African Americans, Hispanic Americans, members of the LGBTQ community. So he was able to increase those numbers from 2016. He had support from different demographics in the United States. And why they voted for him, that is their own personal reasons. One of the things that I love about our elections is that they're secret ballots, because we're not supposed to be able to intimidate individuals for who they're voting for, because that used to happen. It used to be, especially during Reconstruction, if you were not voting for the right party, you would be threatened to be shot, or you would be shot, or your house would be burned down. These are all events that happened in the United States to African Americans and white individuals who lived in the South right after Reconstruction and tried to vote for the Republican Party. I would ask them to listen to people that they respect, who served under Donald Trump, who worked with Donald Trump, who they themselves voted for. General Mattis came out yesterday and said that Donald Trump is a threat to our nation. George W. Bush, who no one has really heard from other than his art portraits since he left office, came out and called this an insurrection. And so I would merely ask them that today, regardless of how you voted in the past and how you feel about him, ask yourself the question, is this acceptable, and do I still support him? And that means that we have to have conversations with our friends and our family members that are going to be uncomfortable. We spend a lot of time saying we shouldn't talk about religion or politics. Those are the two conversations you should never have. And I would make the counterargument, those are the two conversations that we should have. Politics is life and death, and it impacts us from the moment we wake up to the moment that we go to bed. And we should have those conversations with our family members and with our friends, asking them what policies they support. Engaging in political conversations is just as important to our democracy as voting. And so if you have Trump supporters as family or friends, or you still support what happened yesterday, have a conversation with someone to ask about what would have happened if they had succeeded. Because they were there specifically to try to give the election to Donald Trump. He has not hid what he's trying to do. He's been very open about it. he was trying to overthrow the results of the election so that way he could stay in office. And I guess the other thing, and one of the reasons that, you know, I'm on here, I subscribe to newspapers, is we have to start trusting the experts again. I'm not an expert when it comes to cars. If something happens to my car, I take it to a mechanic. Mm-hmm. I trust them. We had almost 4,000 deaths in the U.S. yesterday from the coronavirus. At a rally for Donald Trump on January 5th, one of his supporters, not just a random supporter, but an individual who was prominent enough to have a speaking position at one of those rallies, told people to hug, that this is a mass spreader event.
Brother.
I can't see. This is help me out here, Will, because this is what gets me, is this stuff just infuriates me and has for 4 years, and it's been detrimental to my mental health. I'm glad that there's jury duty, and I'm glad that we have secret ballots, and I'm glad that Congress reconvened after the National Guard retook the Capitol yesterday. But damn it, something needs to happen here. It's hard for me to be reasonable about this anymore, and I'm very much conscious of that fact. But it's, you know, all of the things that we have let pass under the bridge with Donald Trump, right down to and including the super spreader hug that you referred to, that kind of free pass that he's gotten needs to stop. And it needed to stop earlier in his administration, if you ask people like me. But certainly today, there should be. Mitch McConnell's wife is on the cabinet and she hasn't resigned yet. And I take that as a very good sign. I want
she
this man taken.
Resigned while we were.
Was it? Oh man, I was thinking. I was at least Ellen Chao. I was hoping Ellen Chao would at least like be part of the majority of the 25th Amendment Committee.
Oh
man.
Oh yeah, I just scrolled up and CNN now reported it about 15 minutes ago.
I don't want us to turn our back on him and go, oh, what a fool. Oh, he'll be gone in 2 weeks. I don't want that to happen. I want there to be some sort of justice. I mean, I'm glad. It's like. It's to say that democracy survived, yeah, like a beating victim. I really want to see justice done here, and I'd like to see Trump taken out of impeached again and tried in the Senate and all of that within the next 2 weeks, if only because, yeah, we still are America today, right?
You should write your congressman and write your, you know, you should
see that's pointless because my congressman's already on the same page.
Good point.
Jared knows how we feel because I'm just appalled at all of this, and I don't want people to look the other way like it's something we don't want to confront. I want to confront this up front and have like bipartisan folks step up and say, no, this cannot stand. Even symbolically, you're no longer president.
Bipartisan folks have stepped up and said,
but nothing's happened. It's all wording. It's all talking. I want to see something happen. I want to see actual plans. I want somebody in power. I want Mitch McConnell to start talking about the 25th Amendment or impeachment. That's what I would like to see.
Okay.
So sorry, you ended up being very reasonable, Will, and I was disappointed. No, that's not.
All right, we've had demagogues in the past. During the Great Depression, we had Father Charles Glaughlin.
We've
had Charles, and he was a radio personality who gained a mass following, and he tried to blame the Great Depression on the Jewish population.
Oh, geez.
You know, we've had these people in the past, and we still have them. But as we have to rely on the leaders, and there are things that we can do, but this requires the business community to stop advertising on shows such as Tucker Carlson. Last night, Tucker Carlson was talking about the danger that we faced as our democracy from Joe Biden.
That's last night, after everything.
After everything.
They're not going to...
Sorry. No, go ahead.
Oh no, please continue. I don't have faith that businesses will do that, but that's...
So businesses have to do that. Businesses have to actually realize that there are some things more important than making money. And we've had that in the past. We had a time in which capitalism helped to lift everyone up. And I think we can get back there again. But it also means that we as consumers have to make smarter choices. That means that if we have a guy like Tucker Carlson who is blatantly lying, who is, or Sean Hannity, and telling the audience things that they want to hear that are untrue and verifiably untrue, we have to change the channel. We have to hold our family members and our friends to a higher standard, because that's where we change. We can be upset and we can rail, but we're not going to reach anyone that we don't have a personal connection with. And I know this is me being rational again. but I have even told my family members that if you still support Trump from this day forward, ignoring everything in the past, I will not engage with you. I won't be in a room with you. That can change. That can change in the future if you acknowledge what he has done to our democracy. We make choices all day. Every day, we're constantly making different choices in what we buy and who we talk to and how we engage with them, what we read and what we listen to. And as a society, all of those collective choices come together. And we saw it yesterday. And those individuals will be held accountable. Donald Trump will try to pardon himself.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah, no, I think you've called. I think you've called it. I think that's exactly where he's headed with this.
And I kind of hope he tries.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say I hope he tries is that if you accept a pardon without being charged with a crime,
right,
you acknowledge that you are guilty of that crime.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh.
Also, we've never had a president try to self-pardon themselves. Even Nixon thought that would have been going too far.
Mm-hmm.
And being the fact that I'm a political science professor, I'm a constitutionalist, I would love this to go to the court to actually see how they would judge. Because our legal system is based off of English common law. And in that system, no person can be a judge in their own case.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think he could actually pardon himself.
Yeah.
And he is facing a whole lot of criminal charges, not just from this, once he leaves office. There are multiple crimes in which he has been accused of. Remember Michael Cohen,
mm-hmm.
Donald Trump's lawyer, when he went to jail. Donald Trump was indicted or identified as individual number one,
mm-hmm.
in those charges, but a sitting president cannot be formally charged with a crime. And the reason we have that system is that Congress is supposed to impeach them first, because we didn't want politicians to falsely accuse a president of a crime simply because they disliked his policies. So he has that. He has tax fraud cases that are coming out. He's got his phone call issue, which people are calling for an investigation for that.
Oh, calling the
Georgia Secretary of State. Yeah.
In Georgia. Yeah.
Yeah. So as much as I would love to see, and I do, I want to see him out of office today. He still has control of the military. He still has access to the nuclear codes. He still has the capability to launch a war with a foreign country as a means to try to divert what is going on, mm-hmm. and to cause more chaos in the United States. Mattis was right. He is a threat to our country. and I want him to stand trial. But as I mentioned, the jury system, it is important that it is a fair and impartial trial, because we do not want to be a failed or a failing democracy. And last night, after all of this was going on, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I started smiling. And I was happy. Not that this was going on. Not that these individuals were storming the Capitol building. But I was happy at what was not happening. Because what wasn't happening was we didn't have the military choosing sides. We didn't have the United States military operating on U.S. soil. And I, when I say the military, I'm not talking about the National Guard. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about active duty military personnel getting involved in this. Because that would have been dangerous. Because there are people in the military who supported him and who supported this.
Yeah, it is. It's. It has seemed, though, that at least military leadership retired, especially.
They do not.
Retired, especially because they can speak more freely. But it seems as if a lot of those folks actually take their oath to the Constitution very seriously.
Yes, and I will say that, you know, we should be thankful that they do.
Yeah.
You know, I served in the military. You know, I took that oath to defend my country, to defend the Constitution, mm-hmm. not to any one individual,
right.
but against enemies, foreign and domestic. And yesterday, those people were domestic terrorists. If this happened anywhere else, that is what we would be calling them. We need to use the appropriate language. What began as a protest, once Donald Trump said, march to the Capitol building, once they started going through barricades, it no longer became that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They were asked to disperse because it had become a riot. They refused. They continued to move forward. And one of the individuals, the first individual who died from this, she was an Air Force veteran.
Really?
Yeah, the woman the police shot, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
Joe Biden is going to have, and this could be an entire another conversation. Joe Biden, when he takes office, has a whole lot of problems that he is going to have to address.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we have the coronavirus. We have to, in order to get the vaccine out, we have to deal with the economy. We have to deal with states that have lost tax revenue. We have to deal with police brutality in the United States. We have to deal with the fact that, remember, we're still dealing from the Russian hack of our systems. Something that Donald Trump said that this was not Russia, but potentially China. We didn't know. We still do not know, or at least it hasn't been released to the media, how much information has been lost, or whether or not Russia still has access to government computers.
Oh, wow.
So our foreign policy is in shambles, our domestic policy is in shambles, and as I said, I think this can be a unifying moment for our country. But it requires us to look at the truth as it is, not how we want it to be. And that means holding ourselves and our ancestors accountable for their actions. And when I say our ancestors, I mean the system that we live in was created by them. The Department of Defense has 3 years to rename all of the Confederate the bases named after Confederate generals. They need to be renamed. Every statue to a Confederate leader needs to be removed from public places. And we need to teach the Civil War and call the individuals who fought it for it, who fought for the Confederacy, traitors, because they were. In fact, everyone who fought for the Confederacy had to get a presidential pardon for treason. It was a blanket pardon for most individuals, and then for those higher up, had to go through and get approval.
Wow.
But this is a continuation of an issue that hasn't been resolved. And people, I've seen on the news and people saying that we've never had something like this in our 200 years of government, in which we didn't have a president who didn't concede, or we've never seen this much violence after an election. But we did. Mm-hmm. And the Civil War was it.
Mm-hmm.
Because even in the South Carolina Declaration of Secession, they said one of the reasons that they were leaving was the election of Abraham Lincoln, mm-hmm. and his hostility to slavery.
Right. Yeah, and he had to sneak into Washington.
Yeah.
Wow.
I do have another question, actually. I was just thinking about this. From the standpoint of a teacher, I know, you know, you're an instructor at CR, but even at the you know, the K-12 level, I mean, in years to come, how do you think the last the last 4 years of the Trump presidency, time between the election and now, where he has continued to say that he won the election, and yesterday, how do you think that will be taught to students in the future, and you know, what will that look like, or what should that look like?
So what it should look like may be different than how it is.
Okay.
Teachers have a lot of leeway. You know, even in my class, I have a lot of leeway in how I present a particular topic. And I try to provide the truth, even if it is uncomfortable. And I hope that teachers, whenever they teach this moment, they treat Trump as a demagogue. It can't be he did all of these good things and then he just refused to concede the election. Inauguration Day, 4 years ago, we had the biggest crowd in Washington, D.C. to see Donald Trump. That is, if you believe the alternative facts. And at that moment, every single person who was pushing that, whether it be politicians or the news to placate Trump, they began this path to where we are. Because this isn't just Trump. He was the leader of it. But government takes people. And there were people in positions of power willing to appease him, willing to lie for him, even though they knew the truth. And I hope that when we teach this and how we teach it, we do so by looking back at the things that he has done and said. And treat him as the worst president in our history. He should be right below Andrew Jackson.
Okay.
Thank you. Everybody falls all over themselves to be all, oh, Andy Jackson, what a man of the people and all that. Guy was horrible. Thank you.
Well, no, I was thinking, at first I thought you meant Andrew Johnson, yeah. Who actually did get impeached. I mean, and removed, Did he get removed from office?
He was not removed from office, no.
But he got impeached.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was. And, in fact, the only reason he wasn't removed from office was that there was one guy in the Senate who had thought about voting guilty. It would, and at that point, he would have been removed from office. But he accepted a bribe to change his vote. And he said in a Senate speech, the reason he was changing his vote is that he didn't think that this warranted removal of office to try to hide the fact that he'd accepted bribes from the president to vote that way.
That's what always gets me is looking back at history, just the underhanded, nasty, dirty games that were I mean, this was how it was played. This was par for the course back then.
But not everyone plays those games.
Right.
A lot of the history that we know and accept were the result of those games, and it's always a surprise to find that out. Case in point, Andrew Johnson's impeachment.
Yes.
Oh, Jessica's getting ready to debate.
Well, no, I was just going to say, as unprecedented as yesterday was, as unprecedented as the whole, like, friggin' last few years have been, including the last 2 months in terms of the transfer of power, it seems like, I mean, we can look at this in a historical context of our own country in addition to other countries. You know, other nations that have experienced coups like this. And so to me, that's good to remember.
How do you mean? What sort of context are you putting
in? Well, I mean, you know, thing like the Andrew Johnson election, like Andrew Jackson. I mean, we're no saints when it comes to, I mean, our democracy, our republic has never been perfect. And I think that it's good to remember that.
Yeah, and I think also a point that Will makes that I want to echo too is the fact that a lot of our worldview, at least, I mean, looking at ourselves too, is based upon the post-war period, which was really an exception to the rule as far as political, like, quietness in the United States.
In the United States.
Yep.
Overseas.
No. But when we look at ourselves and we look at our democracy and we look at who we are, it's tainted by those decades after World War II, which were not like any decades before. And it's kind of reverting to how that was now. Right. I mean, am I characterizing that? Is that anything that you can see, Will?
Yeah. No, that's you're right on. And one of the things that we used to have in the United States was called the Fairness Doctrine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it went away during the Reagan administration. And so if the Fairness Doctrine had existed right now, you would have someone else potentially on here trying to, from a different viewpoint, trying to justify potentially the president's actions.
Ooh, I want that.
So I'm not saying that the Fairness Doctrine back is always the right thing. But by removing the Fairness Doctrine, we started being in our own little bubbles. You know, we could go and we could listen to Rush Limbaugh for hours at a time. Rush Limbaugh is not an expert.
Like, see, now I am not a fan of the Fairness Doctrine, and I'll tell you why. I think it normalizes things. I think if you were loud enough, this is something that you see in journalism now, where you've got to go out and get, no matter what the story is about,
you've
got to balance it with some other. And it just, there are times when you're balancing something that is perfect, it makes perfect sense because you've written it or you're talking, you know, and you know this, and you want to balance it, and the only option available for you to balance is some nut job. And I think that we run the risk of I would not be comfortable here today. I wouldn't be comfortable here today having anybody justify the actions of the president yesterday. And I would not. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. It's kind of hard not to see you and know when you're.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
You're doing. Yeah, no, I don't want to bring the Fairness Doctrine back either. But this, it goes back to, we have to reach out. We have to trust the leaders in the media.
Mm-hmm.
The New York Times is often accosted in conservative media as being far left.
Oh, they're not far left.
If the New York Times is far left, then the far left in the United States is Hillary Clinton.
Right, right.
And if you read the New York Times, I encourage anyone to go there and read an article, the news, not the opinion section, but the news. You're not going to know the political opinions of the authors.
That's true, yeah.
If we go and we trust reliable news media, we will not know the news that we are receiving, the personal opinions of the person writing it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Thank you.
this is like with Tucker Carlson. I think it was it Hannity Carlson, one of those chodes, was like up in the courts, and Fox had to actually admit in court proceedings, no, he's not. It's not news. It's
right.
Entertainment.
Right. Oh, God.
Yeah.
And that's something they said. They said the quiet part out loud, right?
So, and in one of the cases that Tucker Carlson had, they actually had to say that anyone listening to this show in court, should not be getting their information from it.
Right.
They should know that he's not saying the truth.
Yes.
But unfortunately, maybe not the majority of the people, but a good portion of them aren't going to, you know, they take that as truth. I mean, if they hear it on, you know, they're going to take it as truth, regardless of whether or not a court says they should.
It seems the irony there to me is the fact that a lot of us grew up trusting the media and
And I mean, now Walter Cronkite, Rather.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Lou Grant, all of them.
Right.
And because now the media can kind of shift and turn in, you know, become Fox and become entertainment and become Alex Jones and all of this, you know, throw this out there.
Right.
We're still wanting to trust it like it's the word of God when it no longer is, if it ever was. But we still have that inherent, I think, trust in media. We want that authority to be there.
Well, the reason why I was kind of, and I'm kind of now just debating, but the reason why I was thinking that, you know, maybe not necessarily bringing back the fairness doctrine, but maybe bringing a devil's advocate in the mix and try to, you know, if not justify what happened yesterday, talk about
the motivations, perhaps, or something.
Yeah,
why did
we get to this point?
Right. Yeah, okay.
And
I mean, that's
I can speak to that.
Okay.
I can actually help explain how we got to this point. Politicians, I'll go all the way back to Lyndon Johnson. Lyndon Johnson will air the very first negative campaign ad.
Really?
Girl ad.
Right, and it goes down in history as like this big example of a striking political ad. It's the Daisy one, right?
Oh,
yeah.
God, I gotta take
it only airs
classes.
Once. It only airs once, and networks pull it from airing. They won't let it air again because it's so terrifying. But they kept showing it on the news and kept talking about it. And during the next election, we started seeing even more negative campaign ads. There's a website called The Living Room Candidate, in which you can go and you can look at all of the old campaign ads, TV ads from presidents throughout history.
Okay, I want to do that. What's the website again?
Living Room Candidate.
Okay.
And what we found is that people don't vote for people that they love. People don't show up to vote for people that they love. They show up to vote against people that they don't like. And so if you're a politician and you have goals that you want to accomplish, there are policy goals that you want to get, whether it be raising taxes, cutting taxes, you can't do any of that unless you get elected. And so to drive voter turnout, you condemn the other person. You can't trust that politician. You can't trust politicians. Send me to Washington, and I'm going to fight for you against all of the other corrupt people who are there.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone there is corrupt except for me.
Right.
But that's not true. We have corrupt politicians. We've had them in our past. And most of them, because there are ethics investigations, if there is a politician who is actually taking bribes, they will get arrested, they will get tried, and they will go to jail. It has happened throughout our history. And so these politicians are yelling that you can't trust the politicians, you can't trust the media. I'm the only person that you can trust. And we spent generations of people listening to that. And we've started to believe it. And so we have the capability. The internet is absolutely wonderful, but it has the potential to put us in our bubbles. I can go and I can get whatever news I want and believe it. If I want to believe that there are reptilians running our government, I've got Alex Jones. And I get to believe that. And I get to vote. And so when these politicians are lambasting the media and other politicians as being corrupt, eventually large numbers of people are going to say, who can I trust? And along comes Donald Trump, who's an outsider. He's never had any sort of office before, and people believe that they can trust him because he's been on TV, they know that he's wealthy, they know that he's a billionaire. He's been part of our lives as well. I mean, he helped poor Kevin McAllister find his family in Home Alone 2.
Right.
He's on The Apprentice, you know, using that catchphrase, you're fired. And we love it. You know, he had huge ratings. And he comes along and he says, look, I know your pain. I'm not a politician. I know how to manipulate politicians. I know how to buy them. He said this in 2016. I know politicians are corrupt because I've bought a few. That's not someone we should want to run our country. But the alternative was someone who'd been demonized ever since she was first lady. And this isn't to rehash that election, but we've built our own little bubbles. We've stopped trusting experts and we'll trust just random people that we have no idea who they are or what their qualifications. And we do things for people that we trust. So Donald Trump has been saying the election was fraudulent. He kept saying that he won the popular vote in 2016. He's kept that lie up. Even yesterday, whenever he told people to go home, he still said, I know your frustration. We won by millions of votes. You know, they're stealing this from us. And he perpetuated a lie that the courts had routinely struck down. And members of Congress still said that they were going to challenge the election after all of those court cases had been out, because people believed that the election was fraudulent. And because they believed the election was fraudulent, we've had all of this evidence showing us that it wasn't, that we should still take and postpone certifying the results of the election until we find out with another commission. And each of the states did recounts, they had their own commissions to try to delay it. So the people who showed up were angry, and we should hold them accountable. But we have to hold those leaders accountable. So I understand how we got here. That doesn't mean that I like it. And I'm not even sure how we fix it. Actually, I do know how we fix it. We raise taxes.
Okay, how's
fund education.
All right, hold on. How's this work? How's this work? Go on. So, okay. Go ahead. Go ahead with the whole education thing.
We raise taxes. We fund education.
Mm-hmm.
We get smaller class sizes.
Mm-hmm.
So that way teachers can actually engage students. We rebuild our society by investing in America. We should go back to a tax system that existed under the Republican president of Dwight Eisenhower. And under Eisenhower's administration, there were 25 different tax brackets. And the highest tax bracket, now this is all progressive income taxes. The highest tax bracket was 91%.
Mm-hmm.
And most individuals never had to pay that high. They never had to pay that high of taxes because you pay in the bracket that you're in. But corporations wouldn't give CEOs massive salaries. They invested in communities.
Oh, I had never thought about that angle, that side of it, about how the massive tax rate would have cut somebody's pay. They didn't want it to go to the government, so they would have been forced to use their own capital. That never occurred to me. Wow, thank you, Will. That's interesting.
You know, we lived in communities that were still very racially segregated, but they were still closer in some regards pre-World War II than what we are now. But unless we're willing to invest in our democracy, and when I say invest, I don't just mean time. It will take time, it will take energy, and it will take money. And I'm saying raise my taxes, because education can help rebuild us.
Mm-hmm. Because it's the disregard of education over the last few decades that's really helped undermine us.
Yeah, you know, we demonize teachers.
We do? Who demonizes teachers?
I mean, I know I'm partially biased and not wanting to see teachers demonized because I'm a teacher.
There are people all the time that say that teachers, you know, because I'm sorry.
No, get closer to the microphone.
That teachers, you know, they get 3 months off during the year. They don't work hard. They don't work hard enough.
Okay,
I'm
guilty of my own myopic view then, because when somebody says that, I just kind of shut them off in my head because I'm not going, they're teachers.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. Yeah, so you want us to pay for your job to get easier? Is that what you're saying, Will?
It actually...
What?
I mean, yes, it would get a little bit easier.
Okay.
But I would also be far more effective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you have a class of 30 to 40 high school students, and you have six of those classes every day, how do you engage with them?
Yeah. Right.
How do you adequately grade their work? How do you help build them as future citizens? Our education system shouldn't just be about training someone to get a job. It should be about also being able to be a productive citizen in our democracy. There's a great book that came out not too long ago called Schoolhouse Burning. And it talks about how even the founders understood the importance of education. And so much so that in the Northwest Ordinance, whenever they were going to sell land out to individuals moving west, that it was legally required that every single new territory that was selling land would set up parcels specifically for public education. And funds of land sales went to public education. In 1863, in the midst of the Civil War, Congress passes the Morrell Land Grant Act that says we're going to create agricultural and mechanical universities through land that we sell out west. We're going to promote education. If we look at the GI Bill, we helped fund the massive rise of education and research and investment, research and development necessary to generate the country that we are today. It takes money to do that. It's smaller class sizes. It's wanting teachers to be better trained. There are some states right now that have such a teacher shortage that you can be a teacher at the high school and middle school levels with an associate's degree teaching a particular subject. So you could essentially graduate college or graduate high school, go and sit in one of my history classes or one of my political science classes and do everything else for an associate's and get a job in the state of Arizona teaching history, and the only history class that you've had outside of high school was one semester of U.S. history.
Wow.
That's ridiculous. That's not enough. I mean, that's ridiculous.
I read all of the time to increase my knowledge so I can make better presentations so I can engage with my students and provide far more information now than I could even after I just finished my master's and started teaching. So you asked how we got here. We, over time, said that democracy is not worth funding, and we cut it. It's going to take time to rebuild.
And that's just assuming that we're all agreeing, we're all standing in the same space right now, and we'll move forward from here. But, I don't know if... the voices for freedom and capitalism and money and all of that don't want to pay you more, Will, and they don't want smaller classes for you because it doesn't help the worker, it doesn't help the consumer. Maybe I'm more of a conspiracy theorist, but it feels like the system. You were talking about people running for office and saying, you know, I'm going to be honest and talking about, anybody in business who is, or anybody in business, anybody in government who's received a bribe from somebody, you know, you're going to get hopefully caught and convicted and kicked out of office and what have you after that, going to jail. But that ignores the reality of I forget when this was. It was in the 90s, but there was which senator it was, who's just standing on the floor of the Senate handing out lobbyist checks. And isn't that the same thing? And isn't that smiled upon by the system? I mean, we can talk about bribery and wanting to be Mr. Smith going to Washington and the fallacy of that even, but the system is just rife with money, and it's not so much about, I don't know, I mean, we can all become better students, and we can all become better candidates, but I can't see that alone addressing these huge issues when you've got lobbyists and you've got special interests who've suborned the whole idea of democracy and what governance means.
Everyone has an interest group. You have interest groups. Whether you pay for them or not, you have one.
But whether or not somebody listens to that, to what an interest group has to say, should be based upon what they're saying and not what they're paying.
And there are ways to fix this. We could take and have publicly financed campaigns.
I'm a fan of that, and I've always been. Exactly. Yeah.
And this is actually one of the issues with, especially for presidential elections, and the massive amounts of money that we spend on this is actually something that Barack Obama helped bring about. In 2008, during the presidential election, he initially said that he would not, that he would only use the public campaign funds. John McCain had agreed with that as well. And then he realized he could actually raise a whole lot more money by not accepting the public donations, and he could just massively outspend him. And he won. Mm-hmm. And in 2012, Democrats and Republicans alike said, we're not going to accept that presidential money. We're just going to fundraise ourselves. And there are very wealthy people on both sides of the political aisle who are willing to donate money to accomplish their goals. And so whenever I say that education can fix this, I'm not talking now. I'm talking decades.
No.
Because it took decades to get us to this point. It will take decades to repair it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I hope, I don't know if I have the patience for it, but I certainly hope we as a society have the patience and the wherewithal to stay focused on all of that. I'm the show's over in like 15 minutes. Let's move to, and thank you so very much, Will, but let's move toward wrapping up. What can, and I think you've probably alluded to this throughout the conversation, but what can you and I and Jessica and ordinary American citizens starting right now today do with our time, our money, our lives to start changing things and making sure days like yesterday don't happen, or at least don't happen for the foreseeable future?
Subscribe to your local newspaper.
Yes.
That is step number one. Subscribe to your local newspaper. Now, the triplicates.
I was waiting for somebody to mention the triplicate.
Right. So the triplicate comes once a week now instead of three times a week because of budget cuts. And we get, you know, some local news articles because democracy isn't just at the presidential election. It's at the local area. There was a, I can't remember what city it was in Southern California, but after their local newspaper went away, the mayor, someone on the city council, and the police chief found a way to take and basically rob the city legally.
Oh, it was Bell.
Okay, yeah. Because nobody was showing up to the city council meetings, and they all basically agreed to give everyone a raise to the maximum amount legally allowed by law.
Wow. Oh, that's right, and the whole city council or something was indicted, right?
Yeah, and the city manager was making like $900,000 a year or something insane like that. It was crazy. I remember that.
Okay, yeah. And that was because nobody was watching. Nobody was looking at him,
right? Well, it's just this little tiny city in the middle of the sprawling friggin', you know, the L.A. area that, it was easy to overlook. Sorry.
But that's your point, Will, is that public oversight is very much a part of the workings of democracy.
And that is the job of our media. Mm-hmm. They are the watchdogs of our democracy. They are experts in their field. And we need to go back to trusting the experts. So that's step one. Step two is today we should hopefully, either today or tomorrow, we should have impeachment proceedings beginning on Donald Trump or removal from with the 25th Amendment. And in 2022, every single person running for re-election who participated in this should lose.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't happen, what that tells us is that there's large numbers of people who are no longer willing to fight and stand up for the idea of democracy. Because that principle, that elections, we hold them to it, that whenever we vote, we accept the outcome, whether we like it or not.
Oh.
You know, people think that you have to love politicians, but you don't. People think that you can't say anything negative about the country or you don't love it. I love my wife, and she loves me. But there are things that she will critique about me, and I'm glad that she does. Criticism should not be viewed as dislike or not loving it. It should be to make it better. As a teacher, whenever we give students back, feedback on their work, we're critiquing them. We're telling them, you didn't do a good enough job. I would like to see you improve. And we also have to admit when we're wrong. I mean, these are simple steps that may seem like they're big things right now. But I do have hope. And I know, Paul, you want to see action taken right now, and I would love to see action taken right now. But it will take time. But it will happen.
It just occurred to me when you were talking about the steps we could take, and that it's almost like the advice that you outlined, I don't know, the things a parent should do with a kid. Right? I mean, it's like, let's learn to respect each other. Let's learn to trust in experts. Let's do that. It seems so simple. You're right. But I think if any simple step, any the smallest step, if 350 million people do it, it means something.
And we got here collectively.
Mm-hmm.
It is going to take us collectively working together to fix it.
Oh. Will Merriweather, anything else you'd like to add? Anything else you'd like to ask, Jessica? No, both of you. Good. Both of you. Go for it. No, go ahead. I'm sorry, Will. Go on.
I don't have anything.
Okay. So. Well, thank you so very much for calling, and thanks for being upset enough yesterday to get online with Facebook friends and discuss all of this, and then coming on the air today and continue that discussion. Thanks for being engaged. I appreciate that.
Anytime.
Great.
This is fun.
This was fun. Okay. All right. Good. Good. Well, we do have an opening here at KFUG for a pundit. So if you're in the market for that, I'll keep you posted.
Potentially, yeah.
Potentially. All right. All right. Will Merriweather, local author, educator, professor of history and poli-sci out at College of the Redwoods, helping us chew through the fat of what was, in essence, an attempted coup yesterday in Washington. So thank you again, Will, and I hope you have a better day and that your hangover fades.
It's starting to.
Good. All right. You take care. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.